Cape Talk.
Health and wellness.
It's a great pleasure to welcome back to our studios Dr. Claire Naser, who we first met last year when she spoke to us about volunteering with Operation Smile. Claire's a plastic and reconstructive surgeon working here in Cape Town, when, of course, she's not traveling Africa repairing cleft palates on a pro bono basis. But today she's not here to talk to us about mouths, rather about ears. And she's going to introduce us to a procedure called ear molding, which could help correct a number of different ear deformities in the very, very early days of a child's life. Claire, welcome back. Lovely to have you with us.
Thanks, Pippa. It's great to be here.
Before we talk about the procedure itself and what happens in ear molding, let's talk about what can go wrong with the exterior of the ears. What are the common conditions that might present?
Well, Pippa, you know, there are basically two big types. There's major ear deformities and minor ear deformities that can happen at birth. So we call them congenital because they occur at birth. And the major ear deformities are, you know, where the whole ear doesn't develop, or there's only a rudimentary or tiny sort of vestigial part of the ear that develops. And in the more minor ear developmental abnormalities or congenital deformities, you can get abnormalities of the fold of the ears, abnormalities of the positioning of the ears, or the prominence of the ears, such, you know, one would be familiar with something like bat ears or bok ure, prominent ears. You can also get things like lidding or cupping, where the top of the ear sort of folds down. We call that a constricted ear. Mm. And you can even get something called a buried ear, where the top part of the ear, so the upper third of the ear, actually is sort of hidden beneath the skin of the top of the ear.
Gosh.
So lots of different things can happen in the development of the ear.
Okay, now some of those things will correct naturally, but not all of them. And I think that's one of the main things you want to get across today, that not all of them are going to go away on their own, and that there is something that can be done. Let's first talk about how common these conditions are. I mean, how many children would typically be born, if you could put a percentage on it, with some kind of minor ear deformity?
So that's actually a little tricky because, you know, a lot of minor ear deformities are overlooked. So one wouldn't necessarily, you know, pick it up and refer it early enough. So that's the one thing. But generally speaking, internationally, the literature says about 5% of patients, 5% of kiddies are born with an ear abnormality. So it's actually higher than you think.
Mm.
And the problem with the, as you mentioned, about some do correct and some don't, with the minor ear abnormalities, about 30% will correct, but 70% actually don't correct, which is in fact the majority. So, you know, where traditionally people would say, oh, leave it, the baby's going to grow into their ears, or it'll get better, it doesn't. And that's where this sort of intervention is going to play a big part.
Okay. The intervention itself is as simple as it, I mean, you've presented me with the key apparatus in my hand. It can't weigh more than a couple of grams. It's made of simple silicone, and it looks all too easy. Before we do anything else, won't you just explain for our listeners what's involved in this process of ear molding?
So ear molding is essentially using the malleability or pliability of newborn's ear cartilage. And the reason why it's so pliable is because in the first, you know, from 3 days to 6 weeks, there's a lot of circulating maternal estrogen. So that's the maternal hormone is circulating still in the baby.
Mm-hmm.
And that causes an effect on an enzyme in the ear cartilage. And that actually results in this pliability, this unusual pliability. And you'll know, like, babies have really soft ears.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that pliability that we as plastic surgeons use. So we can shape using a specialized device or a splint, if you will. We can actually shape the ear into the correct sort of form. And we know what it should look like, and we know what it looks like, so we can actually shape it to be what it needs to be. You can kind of think about it almost as orthodontics for the ear, if you will. So what this actually is, it's a silicone splint. It looks a little bit like an ear, and it's got a sticky back, and that sticky back is stuck to the skin on the back of the ear, and the little device is then placed over the ear, and there are certain little conformers that have a sort of soft metal in them, and that can then push the parts of the ear that are abnormal into the right shape.
I mean, it really, holding it in my hand, it feels less invasive than my son's plate to stretch his palate was, which was hard and tacky and you could see was going to be uncomfortable to wear. This would be the kind of thing that I would imagine that the baby's hardly even aware is there.
Absolutely. I mean, it's completely non-painful. It's very well tolerated by these kiddies. You know, the only thing is obviously they can't lie on that side. They find it a little bit difficult to lie on the side. So while this is going, if it's both sides, you know, the child may have to sort of lie on sort of a half side or on their back rather than on the actual ear device, because that might press a little bit or be a bit uncomfortable, but it's very well tolerated. I mean, applying this takes 15 minutes. It's done in the office. It doesn't require any analgesia. It doesn't require any anesthetic. It doesn't require any surgery. I mean, it's a very, very simple application. And it's just about knowing, you know, what the normal ear should look like and then manipulating the abnormal part of the ear into what is a pretty ear.
To conform to that shape.
Exactly.
Now, how long does this process take? I know you've said, obviously, it needs to be done in that crucial phase where the ear is still so soft and pliable and malleable, which is for how long in a baby's life?
Yeah, that's really important, Pippa. So, you know, as that maternal estrogen peaks and then settles by 6 weeks, that's really the number. So by about 6 weeks, you really want to have started. And the earlier one starts, the better. And studies from the States have actually shown, a publication from 2015 actually showed that if this ear correction device is started by day 3 of life, treatment only takes 2 weeks.
Gosh.
But if you start a little later, if, you know, one can allow things to sort of get better, if they will, by 10 days and wait for 10 days, maybe wait for 2 weeks and then start, you're obviously going to treat for a little bit longer, because the ear is, the older the baby gets, the less pliable it is.
Mm-hmm.
So really the take-home message is that earlier you get started with it, the better. And if you can start in the first, you know, 7 to 10 days, excellent.
Okay. Interesting question in here from Sue on the email, who says, my family has a history of bat ears. Every one of my siblings had to have ours surgically corrected in childhood. Is there anything I can do to prevent passing on the condition to my own children one day? It's a great question, Sue, because we haven't gone there as to what causes these kinds of abnormalities.
Yeah, it's very, very good. I mean, great question. It is often familial, so it is passed down. And in utero, you get folding of the ear cartilage. And towards the late stages of intrauterine growth, that's where the ear actually unfolds. And there's a almost like a signal that isn't correct. And that's why the ear doesn't unfold or fold correctly in backward, if you will, or prominent ears. And as with many of the other ear abnormalities, especially like these minor ear abnormalities where you get a fold or a prominence or something that's abnormal. So not really much that you can do at this stage to correct that. But I think what is great is if you know you have a propensity in the family and you know you can have this treated early without surgery, well, you know, that's really cool.
Fantastic. You know to look out for it and take steps immediately if you spot it.
Absolutely.
If you've got a question for Claire, my guest is Dr. Claire Nisa, who is a plastic and reconstructive surgeon. If you've got any questions about this procedure, please call us on 021-446-0567 or give us an SMS to 31567. If you are someone who yourself has lived with one of these conditions, and the one thing we haven't spoken about is what the impact is on a child if it's not corrected. If you would like to share that perspective with us, you're most welcome to do so. You can also leave a voice note on 0725671567. Because let's talk about that, Claire. It's not necessarily that there are going to be any physical impacts if your ears look a bit funny, but the social impact is huge.
Absolutely. So I think, you know, one will think back to school maybe, or if you have kids yourself, you know, they do tell you about bullying and teasing, and kids can be a little ruthless and mean about other kiddies. So definitely peer ridicule is there, and the impact on an abnormality on a child's development and maybe their body image and their confidence can definitely be a problem. So, you know, I think not treating it if you can, and it's so simple, is you know, it doesn't make sense. And certainly an ear abnormality can have an effect on a child's self-esteem, can eventually lead to isolation, even depression. And so, you know, if it's something so simple to treat.
And so avoidable, right, somebody asked me, and thank you for reminding me that we need to have this conversation about the costs of the procedure and what is covered or not covered by medical aid and public sector. I would imagine a fairly simple easy to apply, easy to remove, quick process will be a lot cheaper than going through surgery to correct an air conditioner, am I
right? Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, with surgery, you're looking at the fee of the plastic surgeon, you're looking at the fee of the anesthetist, you're looking at hospitalization. For kiddies, it would mean possibly a night over in hospital or more than one night in hospital. So definitely a lot of costs involved and follow-up and, you know, the whole thing. With this, it's certainly not anywhere near that. I mean, we're looking at probably a quarter of what surgery is going to cost you. So definitely a good investment. The special thing about this is, or maybe not so special thing about it, but the reality is that we have to import these things from the States where they're made. And that obviously with our exchange rate does fluctuate. So things can be a little tricky sometimes, but we've been really lucky to get them in at a price that's competitive. Okay. Yeah.
How widely available is this in South Africa? It's relatively new.
It is relatively new. I'm happy that I was the first to bring it in 2015. So I've been offering it since then. And there are a handful of practitioners that do it, myself and my colleague Dr. Pinard in Cape Town, and then there are a handful of guys up in Joburg that offer it as well. So not readily available, and it's, to the best of my knowledge, not yet available in state. Okay. So as far as the question of medical aid reimbursement at this stage, no. I haven't managed to have any success with medical aids because they view minor ear abnormalities as cosmetic. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with any cosmetic things, medical aid are very loath to cover that. You know, it's obviously it depends on the medical aid and whatnot, but generally not covered by medical aid.
Okay, thanks for that very frank assessment. Again, if you have any questions about ear molding or any comments about these kind of ear deformities or conditions we've been talking about, if you have been through this process yourself and want to talk about what the impact was for you as a child while you waited for surgery perhaps to correct it, please feel free to call us on 021 446 0567. Laura has sent an SMS saying, my child is already 1 year old. Would it be too late to attempt ear molding to correct his abnormal folds on the ear?
Laura, that's a difficult one, and it's actually something that I'm faced with a lot, because parents come, you know, at 6 months and later and say, what can we do? It sounds like such a good option. And, you know, really by that stage, yes, you might get some improvement, and there are studies from the East that have used this in later life. Mm-hmm. But, you know, my feeling is the earlier the better. And it's really, you know, from your day 3 to 6 weeks, 8 weeks maybe, that's when you need to do this intervention. So by 1 year, I'd say probably not that much benefit, and at that stage I would say, look, wait until your kiddie's 6, 5, 6, 7 years old and have any cosmetic ear surgery done at that stage.
Okay. We've got a caller on the line, so I'm going to ask you please to pop your headphones on, Claire, so that you can hear Tamara in Stellenbosch. Thanks for calling in, Tamara. Good afternoon.
Hi there. Hi. I just wanted to ask about calling this condition abnormal, because to me it sounds like it's everything on the range of normal. And I think there's also, you know, considering that the treatment opportunities are so small, shouldn't we also just be building tolerance for these things and acceptance of this range of normal looking ears? So that's really my comment.
It's a great comment, Tamara. Yeah, I mean, who defines what is a normal ear, Claire? At the same time, I mean, there are children with obviously visible, very, very visibly different. And we are a society which I hope is moving towards learning to live with difference and embrace difference, which I think is where Tamara was going. But how do you respond to that comment?
Sure, and I think it's a very valid comment. And yes, I think if everybody was super tolerant of each other, we wouldn't be in the mess we are these days in the world. But the reality is that kids do tease each other, and if there's a small improvement you can make and make your kiddie's life a little easier, you know, why not? I'm not saying everybody needs to do it. It's not a have to, but it's a really nice difference that one can make.
Mm. It's a good point, Tamara. I will just say this, and I hope he doesn't mind. I won't give his real name, but one of my cousins is still known as Bucky to this day, and he's well into his 50s by now. The nickname has never left him, and he was tormented at school for those ears until they were able to be put right. So there's a demonstration. 40, 50 years later, it's still with him. Yeah. Claire, obviously you've got a job to do making it known that this process is available in South Africa and that parents should be looking out and be watchful very early on in their child's life. Obviously a show like this helps, and we hope there are other doctors listening because they also need to be educated. What else can you do to really let more parents know that this is an option?
Difficult to say. Obviously, Pippa, this is a great opportunity to spread the message, I suppose. And ultimately, physician referrals is really important. Mm. And most referrals that I get as a plastic surgeon are from colleagues. They're from pediatricians. They're from nurses that work with neonates. So definitely, that's the first port of call, where well baby clinics are aware of these things and moms and dads get educated about it early on. And then obviously word of mouth is really important with these things, and moms talk, and that's how these things also get out.
So yeah. Get it out there at the Moms and Tots Teas at the baby clinics and tell people it's available. Thank you so much, Claire, for coming in today. I hope we've helped a little bit in spreading that word. And I've asked my colleague Amy to take a photograph of the mold that we can share with you on social media, just to prove to you how really light and unobtrusive it is. You will be amazed that such a small light thing could make such a huge difference in a child's life going forward. Dr. Claire Nisa, thanks for being with us.
Pippa, thank you so much.